I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Psych Legal Pop Podcast. This is a podcast where we talk about popular culture through the lens of an attorney and a therapist. I'm Brooke Brigham, I'm the attorney.
And I'm Tess Brigham, I'm the therapist.
And today we have a very special guest, a friend of the pod, a pod supporter, our Uncle Bill.
Yay!
Welcome.
Thank you. I hope having a podcast with your Uncle Bill won't mess up your age demographic too much.
Oh, no. We're already. Well, you must be excited to be here. It must have been a hard-fought one battle to get this booking.
That's right. My age has been working on this for over 6 months.
Yes. Well, we're happy that you're here because, you have been one of our biggest supporters.
And yeah, from day one.
Some good ideas about things to cover. And today you're here because we're going to cover with you. We're basically going to be talking about sports and pop culture. And you have a unique point of view and expertise in this because for many years, you can tell us how many, but you worked for the NFL in the, well, why don't you describe what was your job title and your job description?
Okay. Yeah, it started in technically, I guess, 1985, but that was just like a summer consulting thing. And then in 1993, began full-time as the program manager of the league's substance abuse program. Then a year later, the union and the league signed a collective bargaining agreement, so there was one big program that they all agreed on. I became the administrator of that program in 94 and did that for 21 years. So it was a program that was agreed upon by both the league and the union. So everybody was on board with doing what they could to address issues of substance abuse and some related problems. So that's what the task was.
Wow, I didn't realize it went back that far, 1980.
It actually went back. I mean, there were little pieces of it, and we worked for the union first. The league wasn't interested, so we worked for the union. Then when the collective bargaining agreement was signed, the union brought us in as the drug program. So it had been around for quite a while before it became official.
Mm-hmm. And so what exactly would land somebody in your program? Like what kind of issues were you dealing with, and what, how bad did it have to be for a player to wind up there?
Yeah, all players are tested once in the preseason for drugs of abuse. And it's referred to as the intelligence test because they know it's coming.
So they can sober up.
It's between April and August every year. And if you do not test positive for any banned substances, you're home free until the next April. Mm. Consequently, it's not a very good deterrent to continued use. But anyway, any illegal drug would be grounds for being entered into the program. So you test positive in the preseason, you're entered into the program, and you're in the program ordinarily for 2 years or two full seasons, whichever is shorter. So it's a pretty major disruption in the lives of these guys. It kind of gets their attention, and it works for most of them in terms of getting their attention, and they're a little more careful going forward, either being able to avoid being detected or stop using altogether. So the biggest problem other than alcohol was marijuana over the years. The other common drugs changed. When I first started in the 80s, it was cocaine. So marijuana and cocaine. Eventually, it became marijuana and illicit opioids toward the end of the time I was with the program. Mm. The other way that someone could come into the program is through public behavior. So a bar fight, a DUI, a domestic violence involving substances, that would put them into the program. They wouldn't necessarily be kept because it wasn't on the basis of a positive test. It would depend upon the evaluation. So that's the way they first come in. After that, there are many more steps we can talk about if you want. But the entry point ordinarily is testing positive for a banned substance.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So, like, 2 seasons sounds like a long time. Is that just me? That's a bit. I mean, that's not, because I've worked in drug and alcohol treatment programs. Like, that's not 28 days.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's punitive.
Yeah.
It is a long time. And the average career in the NFL is 3.5 years. Yeah. So if you spend 2 years. And the other thing is that if you come into the program, if you further violate the policy, another thing we could talk about if you want to get into the weeds, if you further violate the policy and get suspended, then you're off the field. Someone else has your job for the 4 weeks you're suspended. You may or may not get the job back. So it can disrupt the plan that these guys have had since they were, you know, 5 or 6 years old, wanting to play professional football.
Yeah. So, like, what can you say, like, what percentage of the league's players end up in this program at any point in their career?
Well, the population of players in the program was never more than, say, 10% of all the active players in the league. Sometimes much less than that. So it was a small number.
So steroids part of that too?
No, steroids is a completely separate policy and program. So we just dealt with substances of abuse.
And steroids is
a whole other thing. And that was much more punitive. That was immediate suspension. The attitude being the assistant director of the players union once told me, I don't care if the guy across the line from me is high or hungover. Mm-hmm. I do care that he's on steroids. So they want their policy to be more punitive around steroids. It's a silly stance that he took, but that was kind of the way they looked at it.
Mm-hmm. Then why, if they didn't care if someone was high, right? I mean, that's the whole joke. Like, yeah, smoke weed. Go ahead. You know, like, great. But I mean, if they didn't care if they were, then why... Why so punitive smoking weed?
Yeah, he was saying that he was a former player. So he was saying that from his perspective as a player. You know, if you're hungover, I'm going to beat you.
Yeah.
If you're on steroids, you may well beat me. So that was his attitude from the perspective of players. But as the head of the union, he realized there had to be, you know, it's public relations in some cases, right? Mm-hmm. We've got to say that we're doing something about this.
Yeah.
And the NFL program was, and still is, worlds away from the policies of other professional sports. Much better, much more extensive. much greater resources. It's changed a little bit in the last few years, but still pretty forward thinking.
What did you get from the players in terms of my own experience working in drug and alcohol? It's incredibly rewarding on one end, but it's also incredibly difficult. It's sort of days are sort of one or the other. And what I found was that you would have these really rewarding experiences where you would save someone's, you know, someone would be like, you saved my life. This, you know, I'm so happy. I, you know, this was what you said to me clicked. And then you have this other side of, which is, I always had such a hard time with, which is like people being so angry at you because you're trapping them in this program. And all of their anger and resentment of their entire lives, they sort of put it on you. Like you're the reason. And then they're pissed at you because you quote unquote took away their drugs. And now you're being the heavy and you're having to like enforce all these rules. So what did you get? I mean, I'm just curious. I'm sure you got a gamut of things, but for the most part, were people happy? Were they like, okay, I got it. I'll change this.
No, I think the majority were resentful and you know, ticked off. It interfered with their life. You know, they had to go meet with a therapist, blah, blah, blah. And they also had to provide urine samples. Forget the frequency now, but, it, you know, several times a month, unannounced. Mm-hmm. So the collector calls you and you've got, you know, 4 hours to produce a specimen. So it's disruptive. So most of them responded that way. But there were some that said, you know, this is better. You know, I need to focus on football. So I got to put this stuff away, at least for a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, because marijuana was the most common drug of abuse that was identified, these guys come in and say, what is the big deal?
Yeah.
You know, they come from a culture where it's
legal in some places.
Yeah. I mean, back then it primarily wasn't back in the day, but eventually it obviously became that way. But it was normative behavior for them growing up in their neighborhood and at college, and they're caught off guard. Yeah. So there's resentment. There's some resignation. Okay, maybe this is a good thing for me. So it was, like I say, it was a gamut of reactions.
So the cases where there was like an overlap of drugs and domestic violence, did they get also domestic violence counseling? Did they have to address that, or they just address the drug issue?
Yeah, if it was, there's another program I should mention. That's the personal conduct policy that the League has that would cover things like domestic violence and other behaviors. So sometimes they would get split out. We would deal with them around the substance issue, and the personal conduct policy would deal with the DV stuff. Get them in a program for that. Maybe their partner or spouse is involved as well, depending on what the situation is. So it was, you know, there was a real variety of services that were available to these guys, whether they wanted it or not, coming from these different policies, substance abuse, steroids, and personal conduct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, I think I want to talk to you about Taylor Swift and Travis.
Let's get to what's really important.
Yeah.
Let's get
people. There's a segue. Yeah. No, I'm very interested in this. Absolutely.
Well, the reason there is a segue, because I think one of the reasons why people are just kind of enthralled with this relationship is we're not used to seeing healthy relationships with these athletes. You know, there's there's been, I just remember there was some years in there where literally every month there was some story of an NFL player who, you know, beat up his wife or girlfriend, or, I mean, it was just awful, like all the time. And then, so that's why I think this is so refreshing. You know, I don't know what your thoughts are about the domestic violence aspect of this, but.
I have a lot of thoughts. The first thing is, and not to get too pedantic about this, but I figured this out. It's 4/100,000th of a percentage point, the players in the NFL as a proportion of the population in the United States. 4/100,000th of 1%. So we're talking about a tiny number of guys compared to the whole population. That's one thing. The other thing is that, I mean, I saw a lot of guys with healthy relationships over the years. Mm-hmm. Sometimes their partner, their wife, whatever, was the person that was the key to their success in terms of dealing with the problems that they had. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was a mother, quite often a mother or a grandmother. So, it was more common than not that I met guys that were in those kinds of healthy relationships. That doesn't sell newspapers, though, right? And so you get these cases of guys who, if I behaved the way some of these guys did, either DV or DUI or whatever it might be, nobody would ever know about it except my family, and the local mm-hmm. police. But because of who they are, this stuff gets promoted out there pretty widely.
Yeah.
Having said that, the kind of relationship you're talking about with Travis and Kelsey, it was a nice story, a nice wholesome love story, I guess. Mm-hmm. And it's good for everybody, I suppose. I mean, obviously, it's good for her. It's good for the NFL.
Their viewership increased like 400% or something.
I looked up where to put that. The NFL viewership last year went up 7%. When Taylor was attending a game, it was 10 to 15% higher mm-hmm. than the same games the previous year. Hmm. So it's a significant factor, her being involved in this. And, everybody loves it. The NFL loves it. Mm-hmm. Taylor's fans love it. People mm-hmm. who never heard of her, maybe, have come to know of her, I suppose, older folks like me. So I think it's a good thing all in all.
Yeah. And also, Travis Kelce, he's pretty vocal about, I don't know if I would say political things, but he's a spokesperson for Pfizer, the vaccine manufacturer, which could spark some people's ire. I don't know. The football players, I don't know. Are they more now maybe willing to go out on a limb and, get more political, do you think, than in the past?
I think maybe a little bit. Part of it is probably social media, right? That mm-hmm. that if they have various social media accounts, they can just throw a comment up there, sometimes unwisely. Sometimes it can be real influential. So I think because of that, otherwise I don't know that they're any more interested in politics than players were 20, 30, 40 years ago. Yeah. But I think through social media, they get their views out there on whatever. And sometimes it backfires, right? Yeah.
I think they're such an interesting couple because have we ever seen an NFL player with someone who's 15 times more famous than them? Right. If you really think about it, like when all of this started, Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift, I mean, she has so much more money. She has so much more fame. She has so much more power. And normally, NFL has been always seen as this very macho, men running into other men and colliding into each other as opposed to a lot of the other sports. And we don't see a lot of that. We haven't seen a lot of big name football players, especially that are connecting. And it seems like he's very supportive of her. And it's this, I don't need my ego. I don't need to be the more famous one. I don't need to be, I don't need to be the wealthier one.
Can make a friendship bracelet.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I'll travel around and go to your shows and I'll do these things for you. And okay, great. Now, I think it's some of it's changing how our world is changing and maybe catching up to where our world is today. But I think they're not sort of your typical what we've seen in the past. Yet there is this very kind of Ken and Barbie kind of like cheerleader. You know what I mean? There is that piece of it, but they're different.
Yeah, but she's a cheerleader with, I had to look up all this stuff, 282 million followers on Instagram and 92 million on X.
Yeah.
The only other couple I could think of, and it's not the same because I think he was still the bigger fish, if you will, is Tom Brady and Giselle. What's her name?
Bunchen. The model? Yes.
Bunchen, yeah.
Yeah.
Now divorced, but I mean, they were kind of a power couple there for a while. This is much different.
Yeah.
Because of who she is and what she can command in terms of attention and followers and all that.
Well, and she just had this incredible year. I mean, it was right. Like the timing of everything too. She had this, I mean, 2023 was hard for a lot of people. It wasn't hard for Taylor Swift. Like it was her year. And so I think it's even more, right? Drop her at your height of your fame.
Became a billionaire. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I really hope that she becomes vocal about the election in a very explicit way because of all the young people that she can influence to vote, number one, and vote for the candidate that she backed in 2020, which was Biden. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think that would make a huge difference.
Oh, totally.
Amazing influence.
Yeah.
And the population of her fans is a very big population as compared to, like, you know, other generations and stuff. So, yeah.
Well,
I also think it's really interesting that the Kelce brothers, like how both of them, you know, are just obviously they're football players, you know, they've got this certain amount of machismo or whatever, but they both just seem like so sensitive. Like they're not afraid to cry, you know, in public. They, you know, they just, you know, you scratch the surface and, you know, they're just soft underneath, you know, that's refreshing to see.
Yeah. In my experience, a lot of guys like that in the NFL. They're obviously doing something on the football field that it's violent. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, super macho, all of that. But off the field, they're regular guys in a lot of ways. Now, they're well paid. Many of them are famous and all of that. But, you know, they're just guys who are some of them very pleasant people to be with.
Yeah.
But they're not the face the way, to your point, the way the Kelce brothers are. And you throw Taylor in the mix. It's a very positive image for the NFL. And I think it's probably really great.
Yeah. So should we talk about Aaron Rodgers? What's going on there? Is he going to be running? Is he running for something?
No.
Is he being tapped to be a vice president or something?
Well, I just saw this morning that RFK Jr. has selected his vice presidential running mate. And it's not Aaron Rodgers and it's not Jesse Ventura. It's, and I'll get her name. Her last name is McCullough. Her first name, I forget. She's the ex-wife of Sergey Brin, the co-founder of Google.
Oh.
And she's a lawyer. She's got some company. She's very, very wealthy. She gave millions of dollars to the RFK campaign, which kind of helps you get a gig.
Yeah. Is that how you get that gig?
You want to get in there. Yeah. Right. I think it's how Pence got in, didn't he? So this woman who allegedly had an affair with Elon Musk after the divorce from Sergey Brin, but she denies that. And Musk denied, it's a real seedy kind of situation.
Oh, Silicon Valley. Ooh. Yeah.
right. But Aaron Rodgers, he's a fantastic football player. He's just from outer space. His ideas, his values, the statements he makes, they're dangerous, right? The whole vaccine, anti-vax thing was dangerous. And, he signed a contract for $100 and something million before last season. So, we'll see.
He's 40. Why is he still playing?
Well, because he got hurt very quickly, right? So, I assumed that once he got hurt, that, this team's not going to want to have him back. But I guess so. I wasn't really paying attention to.
Yeah, because otherwise, I mean, he's got a lot of guaranteed money. So,
he's got to play.
If they say, we don't want you, we don't want you, they still got to pay him. And he wants to pay, and they want him. He wants to play, and they want him to play. Uh-huh. Yeah, he hurt himself on the third play of the very first game. It was out the entire season.
Way to go.
And there are some other guys like that. But yeah, Aaron Rodgers is a real loose cannon. But he is a great player, and he can still play at 40 because he's a quarterback, and he's so well protected, and doesn't get hit a lot, and that allows him to just keep going as long as he can throw the ball, which he can.
And a lot of this is social media, right? Because I think that most likely 20 years ago, we wouldn't know all these things about Aaron Rodgers. Like, you know what I mean? That he, and we wouldn't know all these things about the Kelce brothers. Like there's that piece of it too, because there've been other players, but because they're not, that I remember saying things, and I can't remember exactly what they said, so I'm not going to say with the players, but that said some off-color things, but it didn't go anywhere. You know, it was like this little blip of a story, and then it moved along. But there have been football players saying controversial things for a long, long time.
Yeah, there was a guy named Bob St. Clair who played for the 49ers, I'm talking back in the 50s, and he was always shooting his mouth off, and there'd be a little blurb maybe in the San Francisco Chronicle, end of story. Mm-hmm. So if you weren't among the whatever number of thousands of people who read the San Francisco Chronicle, nobody'd ever hear it. So everything is immediately available to everybody in the world on social media.
We know way too much about everybody and everything. But what are your thoughts in general about, and I know that you have, lectured on this or taught classes about this, about just kind of sports and our culture in general. That's a big topic, but what are some of the things that you've seen, the big picture?
I've been thinking about this, obviously, and it seems to me that sports are today, professional sports are first entertainment, then they're athletics. If the NFL TV revenues, they just signed new contracts with all these different networks, and it's some incredible figure, $125 billion over the next 10 years will go to the NFL just in TV revenue. That doesn't include all the other sources of revenue for the team. So that breaks down to about $4 billion going to each team. So it's all about, putting faces in front of the screen, so to speak. It's entertainment. So, that's why halftime shows have become a whole different thing. That's why the players have their podcasts or their TV shows or whatever. And it's, we need to entertain people. Now, they have to be good athletes, and the games have to be good. And when they're not good, people dial away. They don't want to watch crappy football. But first, it's entertainment. And so for me, that means that the athletes are celebrities. It's not that they hang with celebrities. They are celebrities themselves. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, obviously. You know, the no-name, no-face offensive lineman that nobody knows about, except for people like Jason Kelce. The quarterbacks, the running backs, the wide receivers, some of the defensive backs, they are celebrities. They've got their podcasts and their Instagram accounts and whatever else. You'll see them on the red carpet sometimes at these award shows and other kinds of things. So I think sports are entertainment in this country, professional sports. And the athletes are celebrities in many cases.
Yeah.
So it's much different than, again, back in the 50s, professional football players all had to have jobs in the offseason. They sold cars. Y.A. Tittle, the quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, sold life insurance in the offseason. Okay? And so, it's a completely different world. These guys start prepping for this when they're playing, flag football at 5 years old, building up to maybe getting to the NFL.
Yeah. Well, that kind of segues into another thing that's I find interesting is Yeah, it's we're now this society, and I just see it just, you know, just around me in general, but it's everywhere, where kids start playing sports so young, and it's like they stick with that sport, and you know, it becomes like their goal. You know, they're okay. I want to play football in high school, and then I want to play football in college, and then I might go to the NFL. And it's like, I mean, that's a huge dream, okay? And obviously, yeah. I think anyone who gets there has to have that dream for a long time. But I'm just surprised at the number of young men who yeah. think that that's going to happen. I mean, they really do. Like, you know, my daughter has several friends who, you know, this is their main focus. And it's such, to me, it's like unrealistic, a waste of time, never goes anywhere. They go to these crappy schools just because they can play, you know, they don't have to try out. They can be a walk-on, or very few get actual scholarships, but a lot of places will let you just walk on. And especially with football, it's concerning because, you know, if you're getting hit and getting concussions for years and years before you're even 18, you know, and that's the case of Aaron Hernandez. You know, he only played in the NFL for a few years. He got all that brain damage growing up.
Yeah.
As a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I mean, the NFL, a couple things there, right? And that's the this early goal of making it to the NFL, and then the concussion, the CTE stuff kind of comes together in the discussion. The NFL promotes itself, obviously, and has a lot of youth football programs. Mm-hmm. Now, when the CTE stuff, the concussion stuff, kind of became widely known in the public, the NFL started a flag football youth league. Okay. Mm. So sort of, I mean, obviously self-serving. What we want to do is we want to continue to encourage players to play, but we don't want them to get hurt when they're too young. So we'll do flag football instead of tackle football. But they still have both. So a lot of NFL youth football programs, flag and tackle. They have outreach programs in Africa and other countries where they're teaching people about football who have never played it before in the interest of attracting more people to you know, eventually try and come to the NFL. Mm. So it's a self-perpetuating machine, the NFL is, in that way, the way they promote themselves, provide avenues for people to come into the NFL, while virtually none of them are ever going to make it there. Mm-hmm. And when they do make it there, they've got an average of career 3.5 years. Yeah. Now, the minimum rookie salary is $750,000. So if I make it and I play 1 year, I got $750,000 in my pocket, which is not chump change. And then it goes up each year, regardless of how good of a player you are. If you stay in, it gets up to over $1 million by the fourth year. Mm-hmm. But it's unrealistic, is your point, for people to, you know, work toward getting into the NFL. And the thing about, you know, walk-ons at college, of course, is that there's no support for them there academically, right? Mm-hmm. There's no scholarship. If they make the team, then okay, you got to figure out how you're going to stay here in school. How are you going to pay for it?
Yeah, so I think that's something else that's not talked about, Brooke, because you've mentioned friends who got scholarships, but right, that their family didn't have any money. So it was a little bit like, yeah, during the holidays, right, they didn't have places to go. And they didn't have a lot of, you know, they had support while school was happening, but they didn't have support outside of it.
Yeah. And also because football goes on year round, you know, you don't really get a break, at least like in college football, you know, you might get a week or two off, but then you got the summer camp and the winter camp and this and that. So it's a year round thing. And, it's unless you come from a wealthy family, I think it's very difficult to accomplish a lot of this.
Yeah. And I think that, I guess And I, because I was watching in preparation of our show, I was watching Last Chance U, which I had never seen. I'd watched Cheer and some of these other documentaries, but I never watched Last Chance U. And I watched the one that was about Laney College, which is here in the Bay Area. And it was very, you know, and a lot of it was about Oakland and how Oakland's changing. But one of the big things that they talked about was the fact that this is, you know, this is, well, a couple different things. The first one is, which I'm always wondering about, is these kids, they're 19, 20, 21. Some of them seem to have a little something and people are interested, but the other ones, not so much. And it's a little bit of, I guess I'm wondering, like, what's your, I'm looking at these kids going, I understand the dream, but what's your motivation? If you've been playing on this junior, you know, at this community college for 3 years and you're not really getting anyone offering you anything, then why are you signing up for the fourth year? Do you know what I mean? I kind of feel like people that are superstars, aren't they? They're found, right? Aren't they? Don't we see it? Don't we know it? If no one's telling you that you have this natural talent and you're not getting any offers from anyone, don't you think it's time to pivot? But it seems like they just keep digging in, like next year. And I know that people hear the stories of Tom Brady being the last round draft pick, and everyone thinks it's them, but it's a little bit of, but Brady still, what, he went to Michigan, right? I mean, he still was kind of on that track.
Yeah. It's the, like on the Last Chance U documentaries, it's really discouraging to see how many guys just keep trying when you kind of feel it in your gut. They're not going to make it. Nobody's giving them positive feedback here. And it's just, it's an unrealistic path. But for many of them, this is all they've been working towards. Therefore, they've got nothing else. So why not just keep trying? Because I can't go to work as an accountant tomorrow. I can't, you know, whatever. So they just keep trying until it's all over. We had guys who didn't make the draft. Their work, it was one guy I never forget. He was driving a forklift at Home Depot. And he got a call from a team. You know, we saw your film and we lost this player. We could use you. They call him in, sign him. He plays in the NFL. That's, you know, the one story I can give you out of the hundreds of thousands who just never make it. So it is, it's just not a realistic goal, but it's all some of them have. You know, they see a quick payday and they can take care of their family. But most of them never make it, of course.
Psych Legal Pop will be back after these messages. Hello, this is Tess Brigham, one half of the podcast Psych Legal Pop. When I'm not podcasting with my sister and analyzing pop culture, I'm a speaker who talks about mental health in the workplace. In today's post-pandemic hybrid working world, mental health matters more than ever. I specialize in empowering organizations to retain their valuable employees. I understand the unique challenges facing young adults in today's world, and I'm here to bridge the gap. So head over to my website, www.tessbrigham.com, to learn more about my speaking services and how I can help your organization reach new heights of success. Let's revolutionize your organization's approach to mental health and employee retention. Visit www.tessbrigham.com to explore how we can collaborate.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Well, yeah, and it's so ingrained in our culture, in our school system. I mean, it's like Friday Night Lights. I mean, I don't care where you are in this country. Friday night, it's football. And, you know, my daughter was a cheerleader, so I had to go to all those football games. And even I got into it, you know. You know, because it's this communal thing. Everyone gets together. And that's just so much a part of our culture. And so, you know, yeah, you get that adoration. You know, if you're a good player in high school, you get that positive feedback. And then, yeah, it becomes like the sunken cost fallacy, you know, at a certain point where it's like, I've invested all these years in this. And yeah, maybe if I just keep going, if I play one more year, you know, something will happen.
Yeah. And well, and what I, in the Last Chance U, one of the teachers was talking about how you look at this at Laney College, she was saying, even though you all get special treatment here, right? Even at Laney College, they're special. So I can see the drive and desire of you're very, very special and important in high school. Then you go to college and you're very, very important and special. And that to leave that specialness to go, okay, I'm going to go, you know, let me try to focus on building a business or being an accountant or any of these other things. I can understand that that's not where they want to go. But at the same time, it's heartbreaking that the Last Chance U was a tough, I mean, really, I had a gamut of emotions. And then you see how much these kids are dealing with. And then the other layer, I didn't watch the other seasons, but the other layer of it was just the Bay Area and how incredibly expensive it is to live here. And the fact that Laney College once upon a time was a place that a lot of people could go to, and you could live in Oakland and you can afford a place, but all these kids, they're driving in from Stockton. They're driving in from all, like, you know, hours and hours away just to play at this one school, but no one can afford to live near the school. So they're taken care of in a lot of ways, but they're not taken care of in other ways. And actually the things they actually need more than they need of these other things.
There's another element to this in the colleges and in terms of educational pipeline, and that's what the colleges get out of this. Mm-hmm. And that's all the TV revenue that the big schools get from football. And of course, none of that went to the players up until the last several years when the name, image, and likeness ruling came down, where a player in college can promote the local car dealership and get paid by them, or be a spokesperson for whomever. Their likeness is used in an ad for the college; they get paid for it. And now there are these collectives, these donor collectives at major colleges. They're well-heeled alumni of the colleges who put whatever. Each of them puts $100,000 in the pot. And that money gets filtered out to various players on the football team for different things that they do. Again, the whole car dealership, that sort of thing. So there's a motivation for the colleges to attract these guys, because that's going to bring in TV revenue money for them. Money that actually helps support, you know, the women's lacrosse team, for example. So it's a good thing in that way that it gets spread out a bit. So it's incredibly intertwined, you know, money and benefits and all that. And at the colleges, the players' college education is down the list there a ways.
Yeah.
And that's why most of them don't graduate from college.
And that's that was the other thing you see in Last Chance U. It's like how, and you feel for some of them. One guy was a father of two, and you understand that, but the academic, you know, they had to keep the academics up, but at the same time, they don't really have a lot of time for academics. Like, it's not exactly, you know, and it seems like they were maybe getting some help. They were getting tutoring and other help, but yeah, I mean, the thing is that I had one client who I think had probably the healthiest way of thinking about it, because he played football all through high school, like up at 5 a.m. every day, did that for years. He went to college. He was like, I was good enough to play in college. And he played a 4-year university, like big school. But he was like, but I'm never going to make it to the NFL. And he knew that. He knew. And basically for him, it was, I got up every day at 5 a.m. in high school, because that was the only way I was going to get to college and have it paid for. And so when he left, he really, he had a very like he knew there was no dream, but he has NFL player friends. Like he would tell me about going to this party and that part, like bachelor parties and all this kind of stuff for his NFL friends. But he very much saw what it was for. And I it was interesting just watching Last Chance U. I'm like, I'm not seeing any of those kinds of, you know, those people who are like, listen, I have this talent, but I also don't have the money to go to college. So let me play and, but I can get a free ride. And you don't see a lot of that. I mean, maybe they aren't, maybe they're there. They're just not part of Last Chance U because they're not very interesting television. But I would think there would be more of those kinds of people, but maybe not.
I've seen a few guys come out of that Last Chance U thing, make it to the NFL, but they're the rare exception. Most of them, of course, never make it.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea, like the statistic of how many college football players actually graduate?
Oh.
It's below 50%.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was that.
I had it somewhere. It's low. It's low. Mm-hmm. And in other sports, the NFL changed their eligibility requirements over the years. And so you have to use up all 4 years of your college eligibility before you can be drafted. Doesn't mean that you graduated in those 4 years. But you have to use up that eligibility. In the NBA, you have to be 1 year past your high school graduation date. That's it. You don't have to go to college at all. Major League Baseball, you have to be a high school graduate. So the NFL players with college degrees are sitting at the top, actually, compared to the NBA and Major League Baseball, where they don't have to go to college. But with professional football, at least you have to go use up all that eligibility, get all that film and experience. I think it should be a requirement that they have their degree before they can get drafted into the NFL. I think that would might pay off. A bachelor's degree is not the, you know, the ticket to riches necessarily, but at least they'd have that done at the point they came in. And some of them do go back and finish when they're in the NFL, and some get graduate degrees, and there are physicians and scientists and who've come out of that bunch as well.
Well, the nice thing is, because I've seen these programs where they will write that they will recruit from NFL players to write for sales, like something that they have never trained for before, but they have the skills and ability to do it, right? So I'm trying to think of some of the companies and the organizations, but I remember reading about that thinking, oh yeah, I absolutely, just knowing from what my own experience of just hearing that one client who had at 15, like getting up at 5 a.m. I don't think I would do that. Like I wouldn't have done that at 15. I'm going to tell you that right now. So I don't even do it now. So, you know, if I would think that they would be a great group of people to pick from, right? That have the discipline, have the drive, have the ability, and take all those skills and just put it into something else. It's more realistic.
Right. And if you mentioned sales, and I can just imagine cases where, you know, so a former NFL player is coming in to pitch you something. And if he's pitching it to a guy, almost always the door is wide open. Come on in. You know, pitch your product. Let's talk about football. Maybe he makes a sale, maybe he doesn't. But that kind of background has so much glamour and cachet attached to it in our culture. That a former football player, former NBA player, whatever, can open a lot of doors.
Yeah, I feel like if someone is a former professional athlete or even, you know, a college athlete, you learn that fact very quickly. You know what I mean? Like it's something that always comes up very early on when you meet someone or someone introduces you to, you know, it's
right.
It's like forever. It's like a gold star.
Well, it's even, you know, if you know, Renee, my wife and I are at a party or something and meeting people for the first time, and people do that. So what did you do? That's, and I would always talk about working in the addictions field. And I would almost never say the NFL. And Renee would say, come on, you work for the NFL. Tell me. And then all of a sudden, oh, really? Well, tell me more. You know, I mean, it's the same thing as, you know, you're talking about tests, working with clients in substance abuse. It's just, you know, there's this cachet again associated with all these guys.
So you were the program administrator. Did you work directly with players, or what was your, were you ever involved at any point in your career with like directly counseling people?
Not counseling. We had a team of therapists around the country in each team city and in a lot of other cities where players would often be in the off season, psychologists and addictions counselors and psychiatrists in each team city as well. And then I oversaw and managed all that. The two things I did directly with players were that each year there's a rookie symposium or rookie orientation where all the drafted players come together to get this orientation. And I would make a presentation and do workshops with them there. And the other is that at each team, all the rookie players had to take a series of classes. One might be financial literacy or whatever. And so I would come in and do the substance abuse class with that class of rookies each year. So that was my direct contact with them.
And did they find, I'm sure, because I know that this has been something that's the financial literacy has been introduced over the years. So in your time there, because you were there for so long, did you see a huge, once we started doing these workshops with them and talking about financial literacy, talking about drugs and alcohol, that things really, the ones that got it, and it did change things?
Yes, because in regards to drugs, they didn't really understand what the policy was and what kind of trouble they'd get into. So part of what we were doing was telling them how that worked and what they needed to do to stay clean. We also talked about the effects of drugs on athletic performance, that kind of thing. So yeah, it did make a difference, and it did get the attention of a lot of them, let's say. Not all of them, certainly.
Yeah. Well, if someone has, I mean, that's the thing, right? It's, while it may seem a little ridiculous to only test people here and there, I do think that I do think that that tells you a lot about where someone's at, because someone who does not have an addiction can say, okay, I'm stopping. Or even, you know, when I worked in drug and alcohol, we had the military contract. So I work with a lot of military guys. It's very similar than the NFL in the sense that it's a lot of people go into the military, especially during the time I was doing it, because this was 2009, 2010. So we had a war going on. So a lot of them were coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan and such. So a lot of young guys, they will join the military because it's the only thing they can do. They have there's no other way to go to college, and they're struggling in their own lives. A lot of them had addiction problems to begin with, and then they went into the military. I've lost my train of thought now. What was I talking about? Oh, about the, this is what happens. This is like elder lapse. But the, shoot. I've really lost my train of thought. Let's cut this out. Obviously, cut this out. What was I talking about? I'll write this down. I can't remember.
Well, yeah. One of the things you said was that as somebody that does not have an addiction problem, they test positive in the program. Say, okay, well, I got to just stop this. We had a guy, household name, big superstar, came into the program. This is for marijuana. You come into the program and sit in the program for 2 years, testing all the time, seeing the counselor, blah, blah, blah. Out of the program, first time there's testing again, he tested positive. He was in the program maybe four times over the 20-some years I was there.
Wow.
Because he would stay in the program, no problem. I'll do your thing. I'll play your games. We'll go along. But when this is over, I'm going to smoke dope. So it was, it was not an addiction problem for most of the guys. Yeah. That's probably the most important point. At least with marijuana, the painkillers later on, and alcohol is a different story probably.
But with the painkillers, right. I'm sure, a lot of people started on painkillers when they were prescribed to them. So what happens there? You have someone who's maybe testing positive for opiate use, but they're like, oh, I have this injury, or I have this, or my doctor prescribed it. What happens then? Even though they may be abusing it.
if they have a prescription, end of story. So yeah. They've got a prescription. Most of the time, though, they got these from somebody else on the team because, you know, a lot of them had these prescriptions. So the guy that doesn't have the prescription takes them because he's got some pain from playing or whatever. That was the most common. Or they bought it on the street because they knew that it would do the job for them and they don't want the team doctor to know that they've got the team coach to know that they've got this problem because they want to play.
Yeah.
And so if it's clear that they're disabled in any way because of this pain, that's going to put them on the bench. So they go to the street or they go to their buddy at the next locker and say, give me a couple of those pills. And then they test positive and they don't have a prescription. So they got to deal with it in the program. So,
but you can have a prescription and still be abusing it. But I guess my assumption would be that then it's about where can they get prescriptions from? Like, I assume that there's one team doctor or a few team doctors that decide who's going to get prescriptions or not.
Yeah, there are two or three team doctors. You know, they tend to be orthopedists, so they're not specialists in addiction, obviously. But they can go to their own. They can go to any doctor they want.
Okay.
They can go to some, they can go to some pill mill and
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and
that's
get
what
some
I'm
oxy.
Saying.
Yeah.
So did you ever have anything like, did you ever see that where someone's like, oh, this guy's got a note, but Jesus, you know, like, this doesn't seem good.
No, I don't know that we ever, you know, got uncovered something like that. It would just be that the guy tested positive and he's in the program. So,
Well, so what do you think, what are your thoughts on the future of the NFL, especially given all the stuff we know now about CTE and, you know, studying the brains of all these deceased players? I mean, you know, because a lot of people now are not letting their boys play football, you know, because of all of this. And I don't know, are we just going to put our heads in the sand and just keep going? I don't know.
Yeah, I think largely that. Heads in the sand. You know, there's new helmet technology that, you know, supposedly is more protective. When they're practicing, they're putting on a big cushioned thing on top of their helmet. So you get added protection during practice. But offensive linemen and defensive linemen are, you know, they're hitting each other every single play of every game. Beginning, like you said, at a young age and into adulthood, I think it'll continue to be a problem. The NFL is not going to go away. The NFL is going to continue to do whatever window dressing they can do to make it look like it's not an issue. And I think that those parents that won't let their kids play football are probably, and I have no idea what the numbers are, but probably a pretty small minority. Mm-hmm. And I think there'll always be a pretty full pipeline, you know, from the state of Texas alone, you know, into the NFL. So I think it'll continue to be a problem, notwithstanding, you know, the tragic results that we've seen with some of these people.
Well, and I think also it's a lot of privilege, right, to be able to say, well, I'm not going to let my kid play football if maybe this is the only way they could go to college.
Right.
Well, I mean, you know, for some, can imagine for some of these kids, right? This is their only, same thing with the military, right? This is their only shot. There's no, you know, there's just no way they can do it. And I've worked with enough clients who have like support themselves. They might live at home, but they work at Starbucks and they're going to school part-time. And I watch them and that's a rough road, right? Taking 8 years to get their degree and just, you know, living at home and scraping by and trying to balance it all. And so I can imagine if I'm a kid and I have some talent and this is the only way I can go to college, right? Like you think you're invincible. So, you know, I get knocked around a little bit.
65% of the players in the NFL are black. Mm-hmm. They don't all come from impoverished backgrounds, but a lot of them do. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, do the statistics on the way it breaks down in America. And so, you know, I'll take my chances on a concussion. Mm-hmm. You know, if I can make $1 million payday and take care of my family, I think that's the attitude for a lot of them. And the parents who are having their kids go to some other sport or whatever may well be, like you say, the people that I'm going to pay for their college. They don't need football.
Let's put them on the skiing team. Tennis, skiing, golf.
Right. Right. Yeah. Cheer, gymnastics.
Cheer. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That cheer. That did you both watch Cheer, the NFLX? Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That was the, it was, I mean, the first season was so crazy to watch and it was so amazing. And then the second season, watching just how, whoa, fame really just blew everything up. And the fact that people started putting things together, being like, wait a second, this is a 2-year junior college. Like, wait a second, hold on. How long are these people here for? Is this your fifth year?
Yeah.
You know, yes. And then at the end of the second season, you realize, wait, hold on a second. They're competing against one other team? Do you know what I mean? It's like, is this two junior colleges in Texas that are sacrificing their entire lives to win this one thing? I thought that was so bizarre.
I had moved
there from out of state.
Yes,
but
they're competing against one other team. I'm like, are there other teams and we're not seeing it, or is it just these two that are like Trinity and this other college that are after you?
I had no idea it was anything that extensive. It was just fascinating. A factory mm-hmm. producing these cheerers. What do you call them? Cheer people.
Well, and you know, speaking of injuries, I mean that. Yeah. Oh my God, that was frightening. Every time, I mean, they've got these girls like up in the air, and I'm like cringing every time. I'm hoping that she's going to land safely, but a lot of times they don't.
And they don't. You saw it. Yeah.
I mean, it was horrifying. And again, my daughter was a cheerleader. She had several concussions and injuries. Wow. Yeah.
But not from the first concussion wasn't from.
No, the first concussion, she fell like in the quad horsing around or something. But when she was on the team, she got a concussion and she also like twisted her ankle. And then at a certain point, she was just like, I'm done. I'm out of here. I'm not going to do this anymore, because, you know, they would. Again, it wasn't just the sideline cheering. They expected them to go to these cheer competitions, just like you saw, all these tricks and this and that. And it's like, for what? Why? Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is so dumb. Like, just go to the football games and do your thing. And the coaches, quote unquote, they're just like former students who were cheerleaders at the school. And they come back and they don't know anything about anything. I mean, it's just very dangerous. And even that woman, Monica, like on the cheer program, like what were her credentials for making sure that these kids didn't get hurt?
She was a former cheer person, right? Yeah. But she wasn't a, you know, trainer, orthopedist, sports doc, you know, none of that stuff there.
Well, and I also think when you take on the role of coach, right, and we see this in The Last Chance U, I guess it was Coach Mike Beam who was the coach. And it's interesting because you see someone like Monica. Monica had a lot of inappropriate relationships. Like, you should not be having so much drama with the people that you're that are part of your group. Like, you shouldn't be part of this, Monica. And so it seemed like she couldn't set really good boundaries, right? You watch someone like Mike Beam, who was really knows his stuff and he knows how to be a coach. I was watching Last Chance U and I'm like, God, this seems rough. Mike Beam, who seems like a nice guy, is like, what the fuck are you doing? Get out of the fucking, every word is fuck. Get out of the fucking way. What are you fucking, fuck, you know? And then what are you doing? And then it's like, and then they score and he's like, yeah, fuck yeah. I mean, but I'm wondering the whole time, I'm like, is yelling at them like this really effective? Like, is this really how, you know, I see that you're a good coach and you seem to care about you care about all these kids and you're telling them the right things. But like, really, but then he becomes a new person when he gets out on the field. I'm like, these kids are 18, 19 years old. I mean, how they're just taking it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. No, sir. Yeah, yes, sir.
It's interesting to watch the different styles of coaches in the NFL or in this other instance. And being loud or not being loud, neither one of those is an indicator of success.
Yes. You know, yes.
It's what's going on up in here in terms of coaching and teaching and leading the guys. But some of them think that, and that's what gives that kind of image to some of, male sports are coaches like that who are bombastic and loud and profane and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but the my other issue with cheer was, I'm sorry, but that routine for 4 minutes or however long it was, why? It was like there's too much going on. How can everyone enjoy? Where do we look? It's loud. It's in your face. And so I'm like, we're all killing ourselves for this, for something that's not even like, it's not even really, is it art? I mean, do you know what I mean? It's like, it's confusing and it's loud. And if someone presented this to you as a show, you would be like, okay, this isn't working. This is too much, too much. So stop, you know, so you do start to think, but then that becomes the standard. And how bastardized it becomes. Like, then that becomes the standard. Right. Now we have to keep upping it. And that becomes the standard. And it's just louder and more chaotic. And I don't know. Well, I just didn't understand.
Yeah, it can lead to things like Ryan Gosling singing the Ken song at the Oscars, right? I mean, how many people were on that stage and what were they all doing? You know.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah.
There was a lot to, I guess, well, I guess in our world that we live in today, we have to keep, because people are so, our attention spans are what, 8 seconds now? So you got to keep, keep it moving, keep it moving. Ryan Gosling in Pink is not enough. It's not enough.
We need lots of flash.
And we need cut out pictures of his face and we need, you know, aerial shots and all that kind of stuff. But anywho, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the career path is for cheer, but I mean, it's good physical exercise, but seems dangerous, like you say.
Very.
Yeah. But years, I mean, and then are they taking, I mean, that was the thing about this college. It's like, and are they taking one course? Because at least with NFL, these young kids on Last Chance U, you can see that there's somewhere to go. You're working towards something with the cheer. What are you working towards?
Right. What,
there's nothing.
Another championship.
Yes, another championship.
To beat that one other school.
To beat the yes, down the road.
Texas champion.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's because we're not in Texas. I don't get it. I don't get why that would be so. I understand why it would be appealing while you were there at the school, but once you got your 2 year, you got your AA degree. Like, wouldn't you want to then move on? Like, start your life, right? I don't know.
Maybe that's why that show was so successful, because it was so like just bizarre. Like no one's ever seen that before, you know? And it's like, what? This exists? And then, but once you see it and you get the gist of it, it's kind of like, okay, I don't need to keep watching this over
and over. Yeah. Well, and just how they imploded fame-wise. I mean, of anything really, right? Like the people that we thought, oh, you're not the person we thought you were. Like, oh yeah, you're really good at cheering people, but oh wait, you're doing some very dangerous things in the background.
Yeah, there's not going to be a Netflix series called Chess. So you gotta get stuff like a cheer or whatever to kind of goose things up for the audience.
Oh god, eyeballs. Are we going to start getting some things on pickleball? Like about. About these probably middle-aged people that are like, this is my shot. This is my chance.
I just saw somebody advertising pickleball, some, you know, now C-list 65-year-old celebrity. I forget who it was.
Oh, yeah, really?
It's
going to be a thing. But it seems like a sport that it's like middle-aged people take up now, right? I know young people that play it.
It's supposed to be easier than tennis, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I know a few people who play it and they're in their 50s in one case, 60s in the other. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. It's older people.
Yeah. Pickleball.
Yeah. The name does not, it doesn't do it for me.
It's not a really sexy name.
But, well, that's the new Netflix documentary. It's an 8-part documentary.
Right.
About pickleball. And it's like a lot of middle-aged couples talking about their injuries. Yes. Right. Like, you know, this is my racket and this is where we go when we play. And
brought to you by AARP and Consumer Cellular.
Right. And Activia.
Jamie Lee Curtis. Okay.
Yes. All right. Well, have we said it all? Did we cover all of our NFL? Bill, was there anything that we didn't talk about?
No. Well, I mean, there's a lot, right? But we covered a lot. covered a lot.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's not going anywhere. None of this stuff. In fact, it's getting bigger, part of our lives. Yeah. Basically, you can't be an American and escape it. I mean, you know, the Super Bowl is probably one of the biggest events in our country every year, you know.
It was the most watched television program in the history of television, this last Super Bowl.
Oh, wow.
Nothing's been bigger.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and I think what's interesting about it is that right, with all of these streaming channels and the fact that once upon a time, right, 40 million people tuned in to watch Friends, but there are no TV shows like that today that you have that kind of viewership because we don't have, you know, because there are so many channels. People are watching things. No, people aren't watching things in real time. And really, NFL and Super Bowl is one of those events more than the Oscars. Right. I didn't watch the Oscars. I didn't watch the Super Bowl because I was on a plane. But like, you know, normally I would watch the Super Bowl before I would watch the Oscars.
Oh, I watch the Super Bowl every year
because it is this event. It is this event that we're all watching together, and tons of people watch it, even if they hate sports, so they don't really care about football, or because they want to watch the commercials or whoever's the halftime show or whatever that is. Yeah. But
they go to the Super Bowl party.
They go to
Not necessarily watching the game. Yeah. In that way, it's good community building, if you will, if people come together socially.
Yeah. And then get too drunk and get in a fight.
Somebody throws the onion dip across the room and it's a mess. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, maybe just in our family. I don't know. Well, this has been a delight.
Yes.
Thank you for coming on, and I hope you come back and we can talk about.
We'll have to see if we can slot you back in.
Yeah.
Very tight schedule.
We'll have our people contact your people.
Call my people. Yeah.
Yes.
Great. It's fun.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Come back anytime and keep your suggestions coming.
Okay.
even though you're our uncle and older than us, you're very hip. You have your finger on the pulse of popular culture.
Bill has always had his finger on the pulse.
Yeah.
You have. And in relationship to your siblings.
Yeah. I check my own pulse every day.
Good.
I check popular culture.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
No, you always know it, what's going on, and don't have to explain everything to you like we have to explain to our dad.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, I don't think he understands the podcast at all. He does not understand this podcast.
He doesn't even like remember that we have a podcast.
Yeah.
Like every time we talk about it, he's like, what? Like, what? do you think he knows who Taylor Swift is?
Oh, yeah. Dad? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He knows who all these people are. Yeah, I think he would know who that is, but dad's not up on anything like technologically, media. Bill, you've always been up on technology, like much more than, right? Yeah, I mean, you've always been on that. So I think it's the technology stuff because Dad doesn't even understand how to access a podcast.
But I'll tell you what he is very knowledgeable about, as am I, and we sometimes trade things on email, Seinfeld.
Ah, yes.
He and I can both quote from Seinfeld, drop of a hat. So
yes,
I don't know what that's worth, but there you go.
Yeah. No, he basically can interject that in every conversation. He's like, well, there was a Seinfeld episode about that.
I do it all the time. It drives Renee crazy. I did it yesterday. We walked by the Gap and I saw there's the Seinfeld story. Let me tell you.
So. She's like, oh, God, not again.
Right. Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for tuning in. If you haven't already, if you like our podcast, we would appreciate it if you would subscribe and also give us a 5-star rating. And you can find us on social media at Psych Legal Pop on TikTok and Instagram.
And our Patreon came out yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yes. I'm confused about the timing of this.
Yes, yes.
In case you missed the big announcement, you can go back and hear it. We have a Patreon now.
Woo, yay!
Yeah. So if you want to give us some extra support, you can become a Patreon member. Just go to Patreon and search for Psych Legal Pop. There's a lot of exciting stuff on there, which you can check out for yourself. But
yeah,
very exciting.
It is very exciting. Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.